Thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation to speak, and it's an honor to maybe be the last one. It's okay. Okay, yeah, so I will talk about physics of near extremal black holes. Just I will start with some words about motivations. I mean, probably this is familiar to all of you, but first of all, the black holes that we observe in space-time, they are near extremal, they're rotating near extremal. So this is a classical motivation, so it's interesting to study them even classically. In particular, it's very, very interesting that they have these ideas two-throat, and actually that proves very, very useful to study them, even to look at geodesics, that they're very difficult to study in curve, that simplify a lot when you recognize that they have this simple geometry close to the horizon. But okay, they are very difficult, so I'm not going to talk about them mostly. I will talk a little bit about this paper in the end that talks about near extremal rotating black holes in 3D. It's the BTC black hole that is simpler. And then the second motivation is more quantum, which is to understand. So the main question that I want to study is what is the spectrum of near extremal black holes? What is their spectrum? And so this might seem like a funny question because, for example, for extremal black holes, we have microscopic counting. So you would think that that's the entropy is the area and that's all. But at the same time, there was a paper very long time ago maybe I won't write the authors, but it's Preskill, Schwartz, Shapir, Trivedi, and Wilczek that talks about limitations of the statistical description of black. Let me write it. Of the statistical description of near extremal black hole at very low temperatures. So this is okay. Preskill et al. 91. So there seems to be something singular about taking the low temperature limit that we would like to understand better. Especially the main questions that will be interesting is, first, is there a gap in their spectrum? So I don't remember if this author said, but the consensus that seems to, well, from just looking at the paper, seems to be that they believe that there is always a gap in their spectrum. So you have a lot of degenerate extremal black holes, and then you have some gap, and then you have a continuum described by gravity. We'll try to understand this better. And then the second question is what is actually the entropy of the extremal black hole? If we have these issues at very low temperature, then maybe there is something wrong about taking the temperature to zero. We would like to understand. And here we'll see some conflict between the, say, Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, which is just take the area, whatever it is, and the Gibbons-Hawking entropy, which consists in doing the Euclidean path integral honestly and taking all the effects into account, and then the answer can be different in some cases from the area when you go to very low temperatures. So that's what we want to see. Okay, so before I go into the details, I will describe the situation in a familiar and simple setting, which is charged black hole, Reister-Nordström metric. This can be asymptotically flat, 4D, let's say, or even asymptotically ADS. And we will look at the geometry when we have a very large charge. I will put chi Newton equals to 1 from now on. So the charge will be very large, and the temperature will be very low, as I say, and Cecil. And this geometry has a throat that is approximately the ADS2 cross S2, and it has a horizon very deep in the throat of some area, let's call it A0, and radius R0 that is proportional to Q, and the area is proportional to Q squared. This is probably very familiar, but I thought I would make my point in this simple case, so then when I go to the details, you can, I don't know, check your emails or whatever. So the important thing about this throat that will be important later is that we have an emergent SL2 symmetry. We conformal symmetry from the ADS2. Well, I would just mention quickly that this is an ADS2 geometry supported by this charge, but the interesting thing about the rotating BTC or the extremal curve is that it's a vacuum solution. You don't need anything else to find it, to produce the ADS2 geometry. Okay, so what is the, well, I would put BH, this is, what is the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy? Meaning, just compute the area, would tell you that the entropy has some large background value, and then you have small correction from the temperature that have this form. And here, m gap is 1 over q squared. Okay, so this is the shape of the entropy, and this is the shape of the energy, will be q plus t squared over m gap. Well, from now on, I will call this E naught and S naught. This is the extremal area over 4. Okay, so so the issue that was recognized in that paper from 91 is that if you look at the energy above extremality at very low temperatures, and this is T, then at some point it goes below the temperature at a scale defined by this gap scale. And the authors argue that the statistical description of the black hole has to break down when the energy is lower than the temperature, because naively, if you have such black holes that's so close to extremality and it emits a Hawking photon of some temperature, it will produce a very large back reaction. So the intuition is that back reaction close to the horizon is large in some sense, that we'll make precise later. And the thermodynamic description was believed to break down. One can phrase this in a more fancy way, but this is enough for what I will say here, that if you have a temperature that goes below T, then something wrong happens. So the idea for that we studied in this paper with Luca Iliescu from Princeton was to do the calculation, the Euclidean path integral, and to study quantum effects. This will be larger close to the horizon. And once you take them into account, this problem will get solved in a way that I will describe. Okay. So before I describe the answer that we get, let me draw a couple of pictures about the spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it would have a gap. Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah. So the question would be, is there a gap or not? Is that curve reliable? Okay, the point would be that curve is not reliable because of quantum corrections, but okay. Okay, so let me draw that some density of states. So this is the semi-classical answer that behaves like this.
Yeah.
Well, that would be in the partition function. Okay, but yeah, okay.
I don't see how having a gap would remove the contradiction with the thermodynamics.
No, it's just that you don't have microscopic states in that window of energies. They're just not there in the spectrum. And yeah, that's a solution.
Would it still be true that there's some exponentially small probability to appear the Hawking quantum with the lowest mass above the gap? And but in the process of doing that, the temperature of the black hole would change by a large amount compared to the temperature. So that process of emitting that one Hawking quantum would be semi-classically describable.
Well, in a way, that's the problem that I want to stress, that it's not semi-classical. That when you go to such low temperatures, the problem is not semi-classical anymore. Yeah, so that will be my point.
Isn't that what their conclusion was also, Fresco et al.?
Yeah, but then, okay, so I was going to describe a little bit now, but so the point is that I feel like my impression after looking at the papers, after especially a paper by Maldacena and Saskin, is that in a D1-D5, people found the gap. So maybe afterwards people thought, okay, there can always be a gap. And, okay, that's what I was going to draw. So this is, let's say, Maldacena and Saskin, who think that you have something like this, right? Where I'm not saying that the argument says what the solution has to be. I'm just describing things that people said. So, so this is what they find. You have all the extrema states, and then the lowest excited states of the string gives you the gap, and it matches with the thermodynamic gap. That's what they check. But the point that I want to make is that when you compute when you include quantum corrections in the calculation of the Euclidean action, then the curve that you get looks more like something like this. That goes smoothly to zero. Yeah.
And you're saying that's for a non-extreme ball, a non-supersymmetric.
Non-supersymmetric, yeah. Yeah, so this will be for a non-supersymmetric. So that's a good thing, that's the thing that I liked about this, because from a non-supersymmetric theory to have such large degenerates is very weird. So the conclusion would be that, okay, one conclusion is that the question, what is the degeneracy of the extrema state, is very subtle, and you really need the microscopic model to say it. But it's very likely to be very small, or at least it's not the area over G Newton. And for non-supersymmetric theories, that's very, very nice. And so this is work in progress, but if you repeat this calculation for supersymmetric theories that I will describe, then you do get a gap, and you get a delta function at zero. So if you have supersymmetry, you can have a gap and a large extremal degeneracy, but if you don't, it seems like the Euclidean path, the gravitational path integral doesn't want to have a gap or a large degeneracy at extremality. Okay, that's roughly what I was going to say afterwards. Okay. And let me say the answer. So the answer is very simple, and what we are after computing is the temperature dependence at very low temperatures of the partition function. And in all these examples that I will describe, it always has this form, very low temperatures. Okay, so it always has this form where this is semi-classical answer. This is the extremal piece. This is near extremal corrections. And these are quantum corrections. So the goal of that paper with Luca was to compute this correction and to argue that this is exact at low temperatures, or at least the temperature dependence. Yeah.
You're saying you get exactly that same coefficient of the log in the sitter and three dimensions and everything?
Yeah, so I didn't talk about the sitter yet, but that will be a near Nayai limit, and it depends what. Okay, that 3/2. Oh, yeah, I should have clarified it. So all this I'm thinking about an ensemble of fixed charge. If you fix your chemical potential, and the charge can fluctuate, you might have extra contributions to these 3/2. And so I will describe that later. But if you fix all the charges, fix the angular momentum, then this is the only contribution. And the point is that this is true even when this is true for arbitrary t over m cap. So when you compute the density of states and the energy from this partition function with that correction, you get this green curve that goes to zero. Of course, at some point you cannot trust it anymore because you expect there to be e to the minus s naught correction that are responsible for the discreteness of the spectrum and all that. So, but to this leading order, then this is the answer. And and a way that this changes this curve is that does something like that. Okay. So the energy never goes below the temperature. But maybe I can write it. So the energy is. T Yeah. So this is the one loop correction that keeps the energy always bigger than Okay, so is there any question? So this is what I will try to explain. And up to changing the prefactor, this will be there in BTC, in Ryzen Nordstrom, and in the CETER. So the conclusion is that there is not necessarily any issue with the thermodynamics at this gap scale. And therefore, from now on, I will change the name. I won't call it the gap anymore. I will call it MSL2. And the reason will become clear later. So I won't call it the gap. And it says, what I said before about extremal black holes being probably non-degenerate to leading order. The idea before I go into the details to do the calculation, so let me tell you what the energy scales in the problem are. So we have one energy scale that is like a KK mode scale of the black hole, which is 1/1 the size of the black hole. Or notice the radius. We have this MSL2. And then at very, very low temperatures, we have these non-perturbative effects that are exponentially small in a snot or whatever. So we will always look at temperatures much below 1/r0. If the temperature is bigger than the near extremal approximation, is not good. And so we will look roughly at this range where the ADS2 cross S2 throat gives a good approximation of the dynamics. And the idea would be that in this range, the semi-classical calculation will be fine. But if you want to go to this range of temperatures, then you have to include quantum effects when you do this reduction. Okay. What?
Like one loop is enough to...
Yeah, you're probably matching, so the point is that it will reduce to JT, JT is one loop exact and all that. But the point in that paper was to show that in that range of scales, all the other effects besides JT mode are irrelevant. That's the non-trivial part, sure. I mean, intuitively it's true, but you have to do some calculations to justify it. Okay, so I will start with example one. So this will be like I said, this Ryzen Nordstrom. I will consider. This theory. I won't be super careful with factors of two and all that, but yeah. So this will be I will consider a charged black hole in asymptotically ADS4, which just simplifies some of the calculations. I will just write the metric. And the picture is very similar to that, but it just goes to ADS instead of flat space. And I will also consider electrically charged black hole, but one can do the same for the magnetically charged case. Okay, and the scaling changes a little bit with respect to flat space that I will want to consider, in particular R0 to the 4. Okay, let me just write this just to have them. So Q goes as the size of the black hole squared, the energy goes as Q to the 3/2. And the extremal entropy, well, not entropy, but at least the extremal area over 4 goes as Q. And we will take the limit of this Q very large. And you can do the same calculation of the thermodynamics deduced from Bekenstein-Hawking, and then you get that the mass of the would-be gap is at this scale, which would be very small. And this is much smaller than 1 over R0 because L is measured in Planck units, Planck length units. Okay. Okay, and the way to do the calculation would be to divide the geometry. So this is the black hole, here is the horizon, here you have the throat. I will call this the near horizon region, this far. And because the back reaction is mainly happening close to the horizon, we will separate the geometry in this way, and we will treat separately this region where you can reduce the theory to ADS2, and this region where you cannot really reduce the theory, you need to do it in 4D, but quantum corrections are small. And the reason will be that all these back reaction effects are closely related to the breaking of the symmetries of the throat, as understood by, well, directly in the 2D context was explained by Almeri and Polchinski, Malazena, Stanford, Yand, etc. And this reason won't be too crucial to get the... I mean, it's important to do the microscopical... Like, for example, you can get corrections to S0, to E0 that are constant, but the temperature dependence of the important thing is that the temperature dependence is dominated by the throat. Okay. So to deduce the 2D theory, I will write. So we will use an ansatz for the metric. I should have said. So this will follow roughly the presentation in several papers of Trivedi and collaborators of the past couple of years. If you look in any paper that he wrote that has near extremal in the title, it's there, of the last year. But the new thing that we wanted to point out is that you can trust, so he always does this in the semi-classical limit, and we wanted to point out that you can trust this beyond semi-classical limit. Okay. This will be the ansatz near the throat, so we have our 2D theory reduced on the ADS2, reduced on the S2, will have this dilaton, this 2D metric, and this SO3 gauge field. And these are the Killing vectors of the sphere. So it was checking a paper by this is intuitively clear, but it was checking a paper by Michelson and Spradlin from 99 that these are the only massless modes that appear in the reduction. And when you reduce the action, you get this. Where this is the field strength of the SO3 gauge field, and this is the field strength of the S wave of the or the L equals zero mode of the gauge field. These are the. I'm not going to turn KK modes to zero by hand. I will show that when you compute their one loop, the corrections, they are independent of the temperature. So it's not really a reduction in the sense that I will turn things to zero by hand. So it's just a rewriting of the theory in a different way. I'm just stressing what are the massless fields that will be important at low temperatures. Okay. So this theory is easy to... So the first thing to do is to integrate out the gauge fields. These are gauge fields in 2D, so it's easy to integrate them out. And the partition function that you get is a sum over the charge and angular momentum. Angular momentum is, of course, corresponds to the charge of the SO3 gauge field. And it looks like this. Q. And the effect of integrating out the gauge fields is that they shift the dilaton potential. Oh, I didn't write it yet. Okay. I will write the total one. They shift the dilaton potential in a charge-dependent way. That looks like this. So then the next step is to solve this 2D dilaton gravity theory, where these are just parameters. And here I'm imagining that I'm fixing the chemical potential of mu of the gauge field, and I'm fixing the boundary metric. But if you want to fix the charge, Q, or the angular momentum, you basically is the same as just looking at one term in this sum. It's basically the same. And I should say, of course, the fixing the chemical potential or putting Dirichlet boundary conditions on the SO3 gauge field is equivalent to fixing the components of the matrix that mix 2D components with angular components, like G tau 5, for example. Putting Dirichlet condition on those would be like fixing a like the holonomy of this SO3 gauge field in the boundary. So here it doesn't appear because I fixed it to zero in this case. So I want the boundary metric to be S1 cross S2. So near the throat, this is, so the nice thing about this theory is that if the charge is very large, then this is approximately a linear dilaton theory, so it becomes JT. The idea is to first solve the equation of motion for the constant dilaton background, that is, the equation of motion is that the dilaton potential is zero, and then expand the dilaton potential around this, keeping only linear terms in phi. And the leading piece is and corrections to these formulas are suppressed in in phi naught. So when you do this approximation and you take into account, I won't do it, but when you take into account the phi region 2, you end up getting this answer, final answer, JQ. Let me write it, vitamin Q. So you end up getting this answer where, let's see, so this term was already there. It comes from a boundary term that you have to put in even in 4D. This comes from the far region, this contribution with the extremal energy. And here the subtle thing is that because the metric here is not extremal, it's near extremal, you would expect the energy to be here and not the extremal energy. But this is something that was explained in a paper by Trivedi that you can, and collaborators, that when you take into account fluctuations in the far regions and you put your boundary terms here and here when you divide the surface, the fluctuations in the far regions cancel with the boundary terms. and they end up giving the extremal energy. This is, I don't know, you have to do the calculation, but it's true. So the shift in the energy will come from the JT mode. So these are the contributions from the throat. This comes from the constant dilaton. Part of this expansion. So, well, yeah. When I put the dilaton to be constant, then where is it? I have a part that is chi naught times integral of r, so that gives me this extremal entropy. And then the other part is jt, which is an integral over this dilaton, the metric. And this plus boundary terms. I'm not going to write them, but well, they are super important. But I'm not going to write them. And in these formulas, L2 is the radius of ADS2. So the radius of ADS2 that you get from looking at the metric near the horizon, and the one that you get from expanding this to linear order is the same. It matches. And an important thing you have to clarify here is what are your boundary conditions when you do this gluing. And the boundary condition would be that the dilaton in the boundary to match with the geometry outside has this form, and the length has this form. Okay, so here epsilon is the cutoff, so is the point where we decide to do the matching. So let's say roughly r minus r naught is 1/ε, and we want 1/ε that is large compared to the ADS2 radius, to be close to the ADS2 boundary, but small compared to R naught, because we don't want to go too far such that we are very far from the throat. I mean, we want to be within the throat and to do this matching in a region where there's an overlap between the ADS2 cross S2 approximation and the approximation of the far region. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, it's here. So this is the linear corrections to the, yeah, to the constant, to the constant dilaton. Yeah. The nice thing that I think was noticed in a paper by Almieri and Kang is that when you look at what the boundary conditions of the dilaton has to be, this prefactor is always the scale defined by the thermodynamic gap before. So it always matches. And this is important because this theory can be reduced to the Schwarzschild action. And this scale will appear here. This scale appears in the boundary value of the dilaton appears in the prefactor, and this sets the coupling scale of the theory. So this Schwarzschild action, which is equivalent to JT, I'm not going to review it, but this was understood by a lot of people, Magdalena Stanford Young. And the important thing is that if you're at temperatures bigger than this scale, appearing here, then this theory becomes semi-classical. And if the temperature is too low below this scale, the theory becomes strongly, quantum effects become important. So that's the reason why I was drawing that picture before about the scales. And so if you interpret this not in the Schwarzschild action language, but in terms of gravity, when the temperature becomes smaller than this MSL2, fluctuations in the metric become very, very big close to the horizon. So this makes very, very explicit this intuition that there is something happening at that gap scale. Okay, and well, as a final comment, this can be solved exactly. So that's what the one loop exactness that Victor was mentioning. And this is the answer. So as I said, this term that comes from the JT mode is the one responsible for the shift in the energy above extremality, also gives the shift in the entropy, semi-classical contributions, and then the important part is this one, that is one loop exact, and fixes the dependence with temperature. So this is the origin of that log T that I wrote before. And before, Let's see how it would. Yeah, okay. So let me mention, before I write the final answers, let me mention some sorts of corrections that could appear that we argue that are not important for the temperature dependence. So one is massive KK modes. They can contribute to the one loop corrections. We are not turning them to zero by hand or anything. And if you compute their one loop corrections, they look like this. So it's some number that is divergent, but we probably need some normalization. So this is roughly the structure of the contributions that we computed. So you have something that shifts the energy, but it's like some temperature independent shift in E naught. This thing that shifts S naught. And this, I didn't try to do them much carefully, but I think the corrections that go here are very close related to these corrections that Sen has been studying for a long time. For example, for a massless field, we find that this gives a log L2. So if you look at a black hole in flat space, this L2 is R0, so it's a log area correction. But the important thing is that these don't change the temperature dependence. These all go in renormalizations of S0 and E0. And one can even resum over all the KK modes. They all have this behavior. And another important point is that here I was saying that when we are below the MSL2 scale, the fluctuations in the Schwarzschild mode are important. So the fluctuations in the metric are important. The nice thing about this is that the coupling to the Schwarzschild mode is at order epsilon. So it's subleading in the cutoff. So if your cutoff is very close to the boundary of ADS2, then this coupling is small and you can neglect it. So the one loop calculation is good enough. Then another source of corrections is the non-linearities in the Dirac-Dohm potential. And to linear order, for example, we get something like this. There I should have written. Well, okay. This is chi naught. So this is the leading correction. It's something proportional to phi squared, but it's subleading in chi naught. But the important thing is that you can compute the correction to the partition function. And for example, this was computed by Kitaev and Shu in the context of SYK, but whatever, it's the same. And it has this behavior. So it's proportional to the temperature square, so it goes to zero. Not only goes to zero faster with temperature, it's also subleading in phi naught. Oops, chi naught. So it's doubly irrelevant. So, so that's it. And then other corrections you can have are non-perturbative, but those ones, I want to be at temperatures large enough that I'm not sensitive to those ones. Okay, so. Yeah, before moving on, I will write. Let me write it here. So, just to show you, so one thing you can do is to imagine that you are doing it at fixed charge and angular momentum and just look at one term in this sum. Then that's what you get, this 3/2 log T. But then, just as an example, let's do different cases. So one is fixed Q and J. And then you can do the inverse Laplace transform of that answer to get the density of states. And you will get that the density of states has this form that should be familiar for anyone that worked in SYK or related stuff. So the density of states at fixed charge has a factor of e to the a over 4, extremal a over 4. This depends on the charge and the angular momentum, of course. And then the interesting piece is this sinh of square root of e minus e naught divided by m SL2. And this sinh is the one that gives that shape that I drew before for the density of states that goes to zero as square root e near extremality. And yeah. And then you can look at fixed mu. I don't know, whatever case you want, fixed mu and zero j. Then just I want to explain this one just to show how you can have other logs appearing. Then the partition function becomes this. So I will write it. I will expand around the extremal solution. Square beta or 2k. So here what I did is to expand around the extremal solution, which is fixing a charge. So there is a leading saddle point between this term and this term that fixes the charge as a function of mu. And that gives me the extremal solution. So I just expand around that choice, around the value of q that corresponds to mu. And I get this. So q here is q naught plus little q. And I get the extremal part, e to the s naught minus beta e naught, the JT contribution with a MSL2 at the value Q naught, and a sum over these charge fluctuations around extremality. And this K and epsilon can be obtained from expanding, and you get, well, they have a very simple formula in terms of thermodynamic quantities that this was observed by Sachdev in a paper from last year. And okay, I could write the explicit formula, but it doesn't matter. Here, the interesting thing is that this term is equal to the electric field in the throat, and it's also equal to this derivative with respect to the extremal entropy. This is also another thing that Sen noticed in a long time ago, that how was it called? His entropy function proposal, that this relation has to be satisfied. So okay, well, one can understand these things. And so if you're at temperatures that are very high compared to this scale K, then you'll have to sum over a lot of charges, and this will produce a log Q, an extra log T, 1/2 log T. But if you're at temperatures that are much smaller than this scale, then the charge fluctuations are basically frozen, because even one unit of charge is too suppressed, and that log T doesn't appear. And this is because in terms of the charge, there really is a gap, because the charge is quantized. And you can see the same with angular momentum. I won't write it down, but you can do the same if you... So the other case that we study is if you want to fix the boundary metric. If you want to fix the boundary metric, you are forced to sum over spin, because you're putting Dirichlet boundary condition for the SO3 gauge field, so you have to sum over the charge. And that can produce extra factors of log T if there is large fluctuations in the spin. And I should say that something we checked is that if you look at the thermodynamics for when you turn on this the spin, this charge J, you can match it with Kerr Newman near extremal expanded at small angular momentums. So all seems to be consistent, at least classically. Then the quantum correction is new. Okay. Okay, so that's mostly all I wanted to say about this. Maybe I will finish by writing this example by writing an effective 1D theory that describes this to this accuracy the states of near extremal black holes. That is, you have the Schwarzschild mode, and then you have, so this one is a scale MSL2. Then okay. Well, roughly this. This is a particle moving on a circle. This theta is the angle in the circle. So it's a particle moving on U1. And this simple theory captures the thermodynamics the charge fluctuations of the model. And this was also studied by Cherchev in that paper from last year. And you can add another one that, well, the prefactor is, I didn't write it before, but it's R naught cubed. And this is in SO3. And you have a third mode that is a particle moving on SO3. And this captures the fluctuations in the angular momentum. So it would be nice if there was some kind of 1D quantum mechanical model, kind of SQK-like, with these symmetries and with a spectrum that one could match to a near extremal black hole. That's kind of what SYK does, but gets the matter content wrong. Okay, is there any question about this? Yeah.
Just to be clear, so you're saying that the fluctuations, let's see, so in this model, you say you reproduce the Kerr-Newman thermodynamics for small angular momentum in this model by fixing J, I guess, for your...
Yeah, so for example, if you would have the fixed metric where you have to sum over J, you'll have here another term, well, you'll sum over J, and you'll have here another term that is beta J plus 1 over R naught cubed. And this reproduces the shift in the extremal mass if you turn on the angular momentum. Another thing you can solve, well, like what is the actual solution for the SO3 gauge field, and that gives you a solution for delta G tau phi or tau theta or... Yeah, you know what I mean? And you can see that metric matches with the Kerr-Newman. So that would be a J bigger than 1 because, I mean, of course, you don't expect to reproduce this with plus 1 and the discreteness, of course. But this works as long as J is bigger than 1 but smaller than R naught, something like that. Yeah, there is a range in... Yeah. Any other question? Okay. So this is one example about how this works. Some things that would be interesting to understand better would be to do this calculation, let's say just one loop, but purely within the 4D picture. Just, I don't know, do hit kernel, whatever, compute the one loop of gravitons around Reiser-Nordström, and you should be able to find this log T. But it's just a hard calculation that I don't know how to do yet, but I would like to. And another comment that would be interesting is to understand non-perturbative effects. And you might be tempted to sum over handles in ADS2, like Schrödinger Stanford, but it's not clear that there are not other topologies, other non-perturbative effects that might become important that are not described within ADS2. And that we don't have anything to say about.
It's not clear that just doing the 4D thing you suggested would just reduce to this?
Yeah, but
you think that there's some...
no one did the calculation. Yeah. So the calculations that Sen did, and a lot of people afterwards, Castro, Larsen, and there are a lot of papers about this. Yeah, we had a talk about this from Alejandra a couple of weeks ago. They're mostly done either at exactly extremality and integrating out fields in extremal geometry, or if they do near extremal, they do a different scaling with temperatures that I don't understand very well. But so that's something to understand better in the future.
You want to sort of start with the 4D answer.
Yeah, I think that hasn't been done in the limit that I want. Yeah, that's where I'm, yeah. So that's, I would like to understand better, yeah. Because I think the logs that they compute are really logs in the area, not in the temperature, so. It must be there somehow, but I didn't identify where it comes from yet. Okay, any other question? Okay, so yeah. Okay, so now I will move to example two that I will try to do faster, which is BTC. And here the logic will be kind of similar. So I won't explain too much about the gravity side, but the most interesting part, and this is from a paper with Ghosh and Maxfield, was that we were able to reproduce these one loop effects, these exact effects in the temperature from CFT2 arguments without using anything about the bulk. And this is an example in which the one loop was computed in BTC by Giombi, Maloney, and Nin. And okay, it's easy because it gives the Virasoro character, and then you take the limit and you find the log t. So that would be one example in which I can compute the log t. But they compute one loop. It just happened to be exact. But I mean, I can. They compute the one loop with heat kernel, and you could show that calculation without saying anything about Virasoro, or it's just a heat kernel one loop, and it reproduces the log t that we found. Okay, so. So in the limit of BTC, we will look at near extremal rotating. So I will draw the picture that Alex was drawing the other day. So this is the energy and spin, and the spectrum of black holes is above this line. So we will focus roughly here or here, which is the same, which is near extremality and at large spin. So this is what we will always do: large charge, whatever it is. U1 spin and very low temperature, so very close to extremality. In this problem, the theory reduces to JT gravity coupled with the U1, where the U1 comes from. It's a gravitational U1, kind of like the SO3 there, but now the throat is ADS2 cross S1, so that's why you have a U1. And one can do the same, and you get this 3/2 log t when you fix at fixed j. And in particular, one can do, besides that, one can do a little better, which is to compute correlators. So, okay, let's draw this picture, but this is time. This is the horizon, and this is the ADS2 cross S1. So you can compute. So, for example, of course, if you compute correlators that are too close, then they will roughly, intuitively, they will only probe the asymptotics of the geometry. But if you compute correlators that are in the IR, very far away from each other in time, then you expect them to probe the ADS2, the throat. And this is something that was done very carefully by Trivedi in 4D, and we repeated it in 3D. And the answer is that the BTC the correlators in BTC are equal to the correlators in ADS2 up to a prefactor. So you get a prefactor, and the prefactor comes from the matching with the far region. So say if you have some scalar correlators, and to simplify, let's consider partial waves. So it's just simpler to consider these correlators, So here we are considering the correlator of partial waves on some, let's say, some scalar operator of dimension 2H, to simplify. Then this is proportional up to a prefactor that depends only on the dimension and depends very slowly with Fourier mode. It's proportional to the answer in ADS2, where this L is like the charge of the particle coupled to U1. Semi-classically, this is a very simple correlator. It's a product of 1 over sinh, which is the ADS2 SL2 invariant two-point function. But the point that we want to make is that you can even trust it beyond the semi-classical limit, where you put the exact JT gravity correlators And so let me see. Okay, I don't have that much time, but let me see. Okay, so maybe in the last 5 minutes or so, I will describe the CFT2 calculations. So all this is clear. It's the same game, match with the fire, solve exactly in the throat, and you get an answer. So what I want to describe very briefly is the near extrema bootstrap, where the idea is to use modular invariants to show that any CFT that satisfies certain constraints will behave in this way at very low temperatures. And you happen to be, it happens to be possible to do it. And so we compute the partition function as a function of beta, inverse temperature, and angular velocity. And well, this can be written in terms of a beta left and beta right. There are basically linear combinations of beta and theta. And the near extrema limit we take is where beta right goes to zero and beta left is of order C, and C is very large. The beta right going to zero fixes this trace over states with very large angular momentum, and beta left being very large fixes the it means that we are at low temperatures, because then the temperature will be approximately 1 over C. And the reason why there is a C here is that the gap scale of a near extremal BTC is of order 1 over C. It doesn't depend on the angular momentum. So this means that we want temperature of order the gap. And to find the partition function, we use modular invariants. So we have this beta left, beta right. And we do an S transformation that goes to 1 over beta left, 1 over beta right, roughly. And then this 1 over beta right is a very low temperature, so it fixes a state with right moving dimension 0. But then we have to assume that there is a twist gap. That's all. The only conserved current is Virasoro, so the only state with H bar equals 0 has also H equals 0. So then you have here the identity plus corrections. And then when you compute this, this is just the vacuum character at temperature 1 over beta left, 1 over beta right. This is also what you would compute if you would do the Giambi Maloney, the pure gravity calculation. But this is valid beyond pure gravity, because we can have matter, we can have whatever, and it's still valid. We only need a twist gap. And the point is that this becomes, okay. In that limit, this becomes the partition function of JT gravity up to some prefactors. So that means that if you look at the density of states, let's say, along this line, and you zoom in here, then it looks like something like this, like I drew before. With this square root EH.
So this match is just an observation, or you take that limit and you see the same function?
Yeah.
But is there, I guess there's more to it than that.
What do you mean?
Can you get the Schwarzschild mode out of this?
Yeah. Oh, that's what I mean by JT. It means you get the full answer, including the one loop correction, and this is with beta of order C. So this is like doing a calculation with T over MSL2 fixed, not small or large, but fixed. So so you can see that the one loop log T is exact at low temperatures from the calculation. And it's interesting, because another thing that you don't have to assume to get that is that you don't have to assume that the theory is holographic. That's another interesting thing. The gap doesn't have to be large, just need a gap. You don't need a sparse spectrum or whatever. I mean, if you want this vacuum dominance to be true for, like, in the black hole regime, as opposed to the, this is kind of like a Cardi regime in the right moving temperature, then you need to assume sparseness and all that. But in this limit, you don't need to assume anything almost out of the spectrum. And in terms of the, well, maybe I should say, in terms of the dimensions, this is H bar. Says H bar very big, and H equal to C minus 1 over 24 plus E, let's say, where this is of order 1 over C. So this is a very small shift from extremality, and this H bar controls the spin. Okay. And the last thing, so the last thing I would say is that we can also use this modular invariance argument to compute the correlators, which is, well, at least for me, was interesting. And, well, the idea is similar to this calculation. So we start with this diagram. So here we have the state running in the torus. Here we have the external operators that they are light. They are some O, I don't know, L. Let's say I'm computing a two-point function, right? So I do an S transformation and use the twist gap, and that beta R is going to zero. And then here I have the identity, and here I have the identity. Now, something I didn't say is that in this channel, the left moving temperature is very high, because it was low in the direct channel. So in the dual channel, it's low, it's high. So the sum over descendants here is not suppressed. So I need to sum over descendants in the left moving piece. And we can do that by applying some fusion, couple of transformations. I will just draw them quickly. So first we apply an inverse. We go back to the original channel and this brings me back to the original channel, but now I have to sum over states moving in this, in the torus. But now I still have descendants coming from this channel. So now I have to do another transformation. Now it's a fusion. So yeah, I'm sorry, maybe if you're not familiar with this, probably this is useless, but I don't know, maybe if you are, you'll get something out of it. Then you do a fusion, and you get this. And now, so here the point is that you have a sum over descendants because these points are very far from each other, so it's not in a scaling limit, let's say. But when you do this transformation, then this part of the block becomes trivial, and all the becomes a scaling block, and all the non-trivial part comes from the fusion matrix and all the contributions from the modular transformations that I did. But this fusion matrix is known, it's the Ponceau-Teschner one with a particular limit, and we get that the two-point function is, I would say just, it's exactly the Schwarzschild two-point function. With here some, this is the one that we computed, this is the exact Schwarzschild two-point function that we computed with Thomas Merter and Hermann Berlinde, and it was reproduced in a lot of ways. And this is some function of the dimension that is very simple, and this function that you get reproduces exactly the function that you get from the calculation in BTC. And this function has a lot of interesting properties, but I'm not going to go over it because I'm probably over time anyways. But two interesting things is that you can look at long times, and this decays as a universal power law at very late times. So initially, the semi-classical answer decays exponentially, but quantum effects near the horizon turns it into a power law. And this was observed in the context of 2D CFTs by a lot of papers by Kaplan and collaborators. And another thing is that you can extend this to a OTOC, and you'll get that the theory has maximal chaos. And this is interesting because there was a previous calculation of the OTOC by Roberts and Stanford that is not very, it's very reasonable, but it's not well justified because, well, I can talk about that later, but we do what I think is a reliable calculation of the OTOC that is reliable thanks to this beta r going to zero limit. So we have an extra parameter that is small and controls the correction besides the vacuum contribution. And they give you that it has maximal chaos. Okay, so that's very... Okay, so that's roughly... I didn't give too much detail about the results, but that's what we did. So then, okay, that's basically it. So a couple of comments and then I'll be done. The point of this is that you have, there is a limit which is low temperatures and large charge where there are quantum effects that become big. And you would identify it by computing, for example, a one-loop correction of graviton, or the graviton contribution, and you'll find that they are enhancing some limit, even though the black hole is very big. There is no large curvature or anything. So that's interesting, and it's for me at least, and it's interesting to know at least if this happens in any other context. And, well, just to mention one context in which it happens is that we studied in the paper with Maldacena and Yang, is in the calculation of the Hartle-Hawking wave function in a universe with topology S1 cross S2. So people compute this before, I think in a paper of Aninos, Harlow, and Deneff. And the dependence with the size of the S1 is kind of non-normalizable, so there is nothing fixing this. But, I don't have time to explain it, but what we see is that when you include this quantum corrections, then that gives a saddle point on the size of the S1. So, it fixes some problem about the Hartle-Hawking wave function in this limit. And it comes from the same 3/2 log. In this case, it would be 3/2 log lambda. And then a final comment I would like to understand is non-perturbative effects. That I think that's very interesting. Something we are studying with Henry Maxfield is non-perturbative effects that come from conical defects in ADS2, which are sourced by these KK modes. So you have a monopole, let's say, of these KK modes, and that produces a conical defect in ADS2. And that seems to fix some problems that Alex was mentioning about the pure gravity partition function, at least when you are in that region at very large spin. So even though one cannot compute them exactly, there are some interesting features that I wish to understand better. But okay, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So, if I want to understand what it is that's fluctuating, I guess it's one of these boundary things where you sort of fluctuate, where you have the near horizon and the far region.
Yeah.
But that doesn't sound very gauge invariant if you're just thinking about the four-dimensional solution.
No, for example,
what is the physics?
Well, you can do the 2D calculation in another gauge where you fix the boundary, and then the fluctuation is in the metric. And it's just a 2D metric that is fluctuating close to the horizon.
Soft shell fluctuation of the spherical geometry.
So of the 2D metric. Yeah. And the size of the S2. Yeah. And there are other fluctuations to this order, but what we're trying to argue is that they won't affect this temperature dependence. It's very special about this that these fluctuations have a mass that becomes zero in the throat because you have an enhanced symmetry. So this pattern is kind of important to argue that they are special in some way. Yeah.
What happens if you don't have a twist you assume something?
If you don't have it, one simple calculation that you can do is to assume that maybe you don't do near extremal rotating, you can do near extremal charged. And then instead of the vacuum character, instead of the vacuum contribution, you have the vacuum plus descendants with respect to this extra symmetry. And then you can reproduce the result of JT coupled to these gauge fields. So, so that you can do is a straightforward generalization.
Thank you.